Anyone hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a first. I never get on and then people can hear me. I usually have to jump off.
I wasn't sure which one to call, Rob, because you have two accounts.
What?
Yeah, I'm back on the real one.
Oh, okay.
I always remember the bloody head one, so there you go.
Yeah.
It looks like the real Rob.
I'd just like to introduce myself. My name is Rob.
Yeah,
I got
welcome to the
a
show.
thank
I'm
you.
a.
Thank you
I thought you
for
were gonna
having
say I'm a comaholic.
me. Mike, was the last time me and you did one was in, it says April?
Yeah, I guess so.
Holy
This
crap.
is, I didn't know it was that long.
you guys are busy.
Yeah, it's summer's always rough. I don't know what I was doing in spring that I was so busy.
It's been a
I
busier
think you
summer
had book
than
club.
last.
Oh yeah,
Yeah,
I had a
you
book
had a lot
club
of.
for one of them. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And summer's always hectic with my job, so
Oh.
that's
And
when we.
I can already tell you, if we record in 2 weeks, I won't be on because I'll be in Disney World.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, we'll be off at Disney.
Lucky
Disney
you.
with the kids.
We talked about that last time.
Yeah,
It
that'd be
seemed
fun.
it didn't seem so far away the last time we talked about it.
So how many months of comic books is that going to cost you?
It's a lot.
I know.
It kind of took me because we went 3 years ago and we wanted to go a couple extra days this time because we want to be able to have kind of like downtime, not be rush, 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 and spend time at the pool and stuff like that. So we decided to go a couple extra days. We were going to go to the same place as last time, which was the boardwalk, and we're like, okay, never mind, because it was so expensive. So it went down like a tier, and still a lot. And the other thing that shocked me was airplane ticket costs were like way higher than they were 3 years ago. So
Yeah.
I was a bit shocked.
I think the industry was still recovering from COVID 3 years ago, where
Was.
so that probably has made a big difference with the at least the airlines.
Yeah, they were enticing people at that point 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, 2021, that was the first year that really felt comfortable even going anywhere. And
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, we still had to wear. I remember we still had to wear masks in inside any of the buildings at Disney. That was their policy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but
Times they change, man.
everything's gone up in price. You know how that goes.
Oh yeah. The only thing still cheap is Todd McFarlane, you know?
Yeah, that's it.
You said it. Hey,
That
Todd can do it. How come these other companies can't do it? Come on now.
I was talking to Ed about this and Ed Moore, and he thinks, and I wondered myself, I didn't say it, but he did, if it was like a loss leader situation
I
for
heard this twice.
to yeah, so like he can get like story ideas, and he's probably making enough off those freaking figures that he can probably do what he wants with the comics.
I don't
I
think it's
that
a loss leader. I really
You
don't.
don't think so? I
No, he's not.
think that he
He's
doesn't need to make a big profit on it.
I
That
don't think he would be making nine books if he was that much. He could go back to two or something like that.
Yeah.
That's true. I don't know
And
either.
he's learned a
What?
lot of lessons, man. I mean,
Yeah.
he's been through it all.
But
Bankruptcy, everything. He's not gonna do something that's not.
my favorite fuck you from him is the cardstock covers, because that's like, oh, Dynamite, you're charging an extra dollar for cardstock covers. Fuck you, I still charge $2.99 and I'll switch to cardstock. You know what
Yeah.
I mean?
I mean, it is true. It's like
It is.
how is he able to do that, but nobody else can do this?
The only other $2.99 books are what the Disney, or not Disney, Warner Brothers quote kid books. So
Yeah.
like Looney Tunes, Scooby,
Yep.
I think that's it.
Did they stay $2.99? I didn't
So
notice.
so
Yeah,
far,
they
so
still are.
far they
Yeah,
still are. Yep.
I probably just
Wow.
jinxed them. But
yeah, probably.
But yeah, that was Dynamite's big thing. Like, yeah, we're gonna raise it $4.99, but we're gonna make it worth your while. So we're gonna switch to cardstock. And
well, DC does the same thing for their alt, you know, the variant covers. Their cardstock, they charge $1 for cardstock.
I do like the fact that they're giving you both covers at least now, which they had not done previously. So, like, if you got the JGLG. I can't do it. Jose Garcia. Anyway, if you got his stuff, I wanted to do the initials and I messed it up. If you get his covers, so you get the Jose cover and then you open it, it's got the regular cover underneath it. So
I did not know that.
So I'm glad they're doing that at least. So it makes it feel like a little bit extra value for it. Yeah. You know?
Maybe and not. Then, a lot, you know, but you get to Marvel, they're not doing anything, but they still are. No, charging $4.99.
They had said like a month or two ago, or maybe it was longer than that, that they were keeping stuff at $3.99. I'm like, what? It's like they, just miniseries, and that's
not,
it.
Yeah, yeah, they're not. They said like for their premier creators, they're going to be $4.99, and the other ones are going to be $3.99.
I'll pay $4.99 not to buy John Romita anymore. Sorry, Mike.
Come on, boo.
I literally bought a Scotty Young Daredevil cover just because I didn't want a John Romita cover.
They're off the book in a few months, so
yeah.
I'll cry and you'll be happy.
I like when he does his own stuff. I want him off superheroes, man. Go back to doing stuff with Mark Millar.
No. Stay on Spider-Man. He's been on Spider-Man a long time.
I know.
I mean, even in the 2000s, he has been.
You
should give other people a chance.
Right?
No, I don't think so. Amazing Spider-Man's still a good seller.
I know.
I got 51 and 52 in the last shipment. And I was like, these covers are the same. And Jack grabbed them from me and goes like, nope, this is an homage and this is not. I was like, how the hell can you tell the difference? They literally look like the same cover almost, except the background was changed. It was the Spider Goblin on his glider on 51. And then 52 was the Spider Goblin on his glider. I was like, man, they are getting lazy.
I thought one had circle on it, though.
Like, literally, that was the difference, Mike. One had a circle and one had background characters.
Well, the circle was like a homage to something.
Yeah, it was probably like
the McFarlane one, right?
Yeah,
he had the one.
But literally, the main image looked exactly the same. I was like, yeah, you do better.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I've fallen off of Spider-Man. I really haven't. I know you've been enjoying it, Mike. I haven't been enjoying it. So I'll wait for another creator and see how it turns out.
I think there already is another creator.
Wait for
creator.
The next number one.
There'll be one.
Yeah, who's taking over? Some I know that they already announced it, but I don't remember.
I don't know who it is. It was
Who's it? Been Zeb Wells? Is that who's been doing it?
Yeah.
I want to like the Avengers again. I feel like I haven't liked the Avengers in a long time.
Oh, it's been great though with Bloodhunt.
I have like the Bloodhunt because they're using like a B team, but leading up to it,
I thought they did really good with the other crossover too, the X-Men one. Oh my god!
I didn't
that
read that
good.
One. Okay,
that's fantastic.
Maybe I'll pull that one up on the app. I just read that intro arc, and it was kind of like meh.
I haven't read any of the Avengers, but I'm picking up as soon as Storm joins the team, see how it is.
Me too. Yeah, I'm back on it full time. I like Mike said, I had been doing the B team one because when it was like Hercules came back, I'm like, ooh, I'm in.
Well, that's the badass team, man. That is awesome because they have like Avengers Academy in there. Yep. They got
that's cool.
Hazard. They got Cap, Steve Rogers Cap. Hercules is back.
Yep. Man, Quicksilver.
Quicksilver, a really good
lineup.
It's
been fun. Yeah, I was disappointed that they're quote keeping it, but they're not quite. So Steve Orlando's taking it over as Avengers Assembled, But he's changed the lineup a little bit. So we'll see how it goes. Because, yeah, the one like he was talking about with Hawkeye and Hazmat, and it's been really fun. And we'll see how the Orlando one goes.
I when I saw that, because I think She-Hulk's joining it too, and I'm big.
Yeah, She-Hulk.
I like that lineup. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll try it out. And then I saw two words, Steve Orlando.
Yeah.
No thanks.
It's funny because I really like some of the stuff he did at DC. His Marvel stuff I haven't liked as much.
Yeah, the Scarlet Witch is not bad. It's good.
I like Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Yeah, Scarlet Witch is good. Like his Scarlet Witch is good, but some of his other stuff I just doesn't. He's hit or miss for me, but sometimes he's on.
Yeah. That Midnighter Apollo series he did for DC was great.
It was very good. Yeah. I agree.
So I don't know.
He's I liked his Shadow Batmans too. Like, those were good.
That was really good.
Yeah, I agree.
So fingers crossed.
A lot of the other stuff that
his Marauders was like horrible. I hated it.
What was it?
Oh yeah,
Marauders.
It was bad.
Marauders was bad.
Bad, bad.
Who killed Dokken? When did he die?
Just died before the end. He died in X-Force.
Okay,
that's why I haven't seen his death. But I was reading Helverine, so I was like, okay, what happened?
Helverine was surprisingly good. I got it on a whim because DCBS had it as one of the $2 ones or $2.19 or whatever Marvel is now. And I really liked it. It was a pretty good issue.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was either X-Force or it might have been Wolverine. It's part of that whole end of leading up to the end of that Wolverine series with the whole thing with Sabretooth.
Sabretooth
killed him.
Yeah.
Oh, because I haven't gotten there yet. That's why.
Okay. So it's either one of them. I don't remember which one he died.
Yeah, the Sabretooth War. I forgot about that.
Yeah, the whole Sabretooth thing.
But it's weird because I did read the Wolverine that had introduced Helverine, but at that time you didn't know it was Dokken. So
I think that was the reveal in issue one at the very end, right? Yeah.
I thought I might have missed it in Marauders because Dokken was there as Fang.
Right.
So that's
that's right.
Because I kind of like I still am on the app. I'll still make my way through like the X-Men series I didn't like just because I can.
That was the nice thing about those trades they were doing, Dawn of X or whatever. I was picking those up for a long time, either from the library or if they were cheap, I would pick them up. And those were good because it would give me an excuse to read the Teeny Howard or the Steve Orlando stuff that I would never pay for otherwise.
The Marvel app is incredible, though. Like,
yeah, it is.
I mean, you could go down rabbit holes. Like, I was reading Forceworks, and I saw the little, like, see this issue. And I went down the rabbit hole of, like, reading all the 90s Iron Man, War Machine, and Avengers. Like, I was like, I can read them all. Like, I can read them as they were published. It's pretty awesome. It's really good. Because I was reading this event I've never read before called Avengers Crossing. It's like
94.
Yeah, it's towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, this is the weirdest shit I've ever read. Like, they kill off.
It was
off...
not well received.
I know.
I don't remember much about
it. People were hating it, and I was like, oh my God, this is great. There's like all these murders at Avengers Mansion about people that nobody cares about, like Gilgamesh and Manila, who is an inhuman nanny for Quicksilver and Crystal. Yeah, she was the nanny. And like in the first issue, they reveal that Iron Man killed her and only Luna knows, like the little girl. So every time Stark enters the room, it's like, bad man, you know? But it's crazy. And then they killed some alien race killed Gilgamesh. He just aged until he died. So there's like three dead Avengers and then Iron Man's framing Hawkeye. So he lied to US Agent because US Agent is like buds with Clint. And right. he says, well, can you go talk to him and have him turn himself in? And then Iron Man shows up and arrests him. And everybody's hating on Iron Man. Like, he's just making all these decisions. But he has these blackouts, you know, like, he blacks out and he doesn't remember where he is. But
I don't remember any of this series.
Oh, God, it's fantastic.
I have the one issue called The Crossing, and that's it. I should pull it out. Yeah. Or actually just read it on the app.
Oh, yeah, read them all, though, because it goes across, like, the issues were tightly coupled. Like, they were, if you read Iron Man, Forceworks, and Avengers, you'll have most of it. Not so much War Machine, but he does tie into it a little bit. But, yeah, it's a fun ride, man. It's got some crazy 90s art. Well, it was when I really liked Diodato's art too. Like, it was before he became like this AWA hyper realistic Flash artist where everything looks like it's on the computer to me. But that's when he was doing like Wonder Woman and he was doing Avengers and Thor, because that's when I was into it in the 90s.
Who is it? I always get their early stuff confused because I feel like they had a similar vibe. I want to say, and they branched. They don't look like the same artist anymore. But I feel like early Diodato and Steve Epting, I always get mixed up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
There's I always think of Epting from the Avengers.
Yeah.
Cap, too, for me.
Yeah, for right. sure.
And I always get the two of them confused for some reason. They both have almost kind of like early on, I feel like almost like a colon kind of vibe going on. Or maybe I'm getting, maybe it's
I know, I know what you're saying with that.
Yeah. Oh my God. Speaking of Gene Colan, that's the book I had today. And it was reminding me as a kid why I hated Gene Colan.
Really?
I love him now.
I never thought much, like, any negative about him at all.
Oh, I love him now, but this is probably the issue I'm going to talk about today. It was probably my first exposure to him, and it's not great.
Well, he started drawing really good, I think, in his Tomb of Dracula years. That's when he... And then he went to like Night Force and a couple other things. And I was like, that was the Gene Colan I liked. I didn't like early Daredevil Gene Colan where he was trying to draw in the Marvel style. Didn't care for it.
I remember the first time I really knew who Gene Colan was probably Night Force. And it was too surrealistic or something for me as a kid. And I did not care for it because you always hear about how kids hate Kirby as a kid. I never hated Kirby as a kid because that was some of the first Marvel stuff I read through the library. So, but like Gene Colan, I remember having a really negative reaction because he was on like Detective and, Night Force, and I just remember really going like, I don't like how this looks. But like I said, I was a kid. What do I know? I was
for me, it was Sam Keith. I used to hate his art. Now I love it. I was like, what is this hair? And like, why does Wolverine look so like a beast?
Right.
Yeah.
And now it's
I agree with you. I used to feel the same thing. Now I think it's amazing.
Well, Sienkiewicz too, when he took over New Mutants, I'm like, what the hell is this?
Doing it, this guy can't even draw.
Yeah, I was like, what is this bear? Like, this bear doesn't even look like it's a bear. It looks like straight bunch of straight lines. Then he did Elektra, and I was like, oh God! Like, and now he's like awesome. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Now I'll show Stacy. I'm like, look at this art. It's amazing.
I think what happens maybe as kids, you want everything to be in a house style. And when it really deviates, it throws you. Because, you know, I have been reading, like, Richie Rich and Archie and the mainstream.
Well, yeah.
I think it really throws you.
When you're that young, you expect to see things not stylized, not like an interpretation. You're expecting to see, if it's a good artist, as close to, like, realism, as close to, like, a John Byrne, or George Perez or something is possible. Right. And you see these wild styles. And as a kid, you don't know how to process that.
Yeah. I think you're dead on. Speaking of great artists, did anybody read the Batman 150? The Dennis Callum was so good.
I just did. Yeah.
Yeah, I read that this morning.
2 days ago. Yeah, that was good.
That was a great issue.
I have
Chip's
not
been
yet.
Hit or miss for me, but I really liked that issue.
It was very good.
Yeah.
Mike, you mentioned when you were talking about Mike Diodato. Can we talk, like, what is going on with AWA?
Are they gone or almost gone or what's up?
The only thing they're soliciting in the new previews is just the trade of the last series that's wrapping up. That's the only thing that they have going. I'm like,
I think that's what's going on with the rest of the companies. They're not turning a profit, so they're like, why are we doing this?
It's really crazy, isn't it?
And I think that previews is going into this mode where they're in like a backstock mode. It's like half of the catalog is just stuff that's already been solicited. So I actually think it's going to go to, especially now that they lost Boom, I think it's going to go into like a warehouse type function. And he talked about being a back issue house at one time. I think that's what they're going to do. You know, what's odd though, is you can look at like a 1992 previews and the previews today, and this previews is much thicker, man. I mean, but it's got like less real comics in it. Like, right. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what do they got for, their premier publisher is now Dynamite, I guess. That's it. You know,
I got a couple of questions about solicitations. So has anybody been having trouble with, like, you'll be reading Hulk or something and you realize I missed an issue?
Yes, it's because of the stupid final order cutoffs. You have to keep an eye out for them.
I thought I was staying on top of everything, and then I
was missing stuff, and I didn't realize it until I collected a stack of like four, and I read them, and I'm like, "Where's this issue?
Yeah,
like, it's missing." And then I go look, and it's like I didn't order it. That's weird. And then I've been experiencing that a lot. And Bill told me you got to look at those final order cutoff ones.
Okay.
So that's what I've been doing every time. I've been keeping an eye out.
I thought I'd been good with it since that happened to me with the Zdarsky run on Daredevil, because I missed three or four on it. I wonder if he was just coming in a little late or something. And then this one, I thought I was doing good, and I was like, there's a freaking Hulk missing. And I, you know, I literally will go through the minute that my comic shop post and when DCBS post, I'll go through and say, okay, these are the ones I'm getting. Before I even look at the catalog, I'll start working on the order. Mm-hmm. Or it double shipped and I missed it that way. You know, it could have been a double month. I don't know.
I haven't missed a lot, but I know exactly what you guys are talking about. And it's really frustrating.
It's bad with Marvel.
I haven't missed it more because I do that pull list thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
On DCBS. So it works for Marvel. But the problem is the more and more companies that move out of previews, the pull list doesn't actually work. Like DC, the pull list doesn't work for DC because it's not reading that feed. But there have still been times, and it's exactly what you say. It's like apparently they solicit it, but it's not showing in the catalog.
Okay.
Like, or it was in the catalog the month before or whatever, and I didn't get it. And I used to, when Pulp 716 was open, they used to send email or a Facebook post for final cutoffs every single week. And so I'd scroll through that in case there was anything I wanted to add to them and stuff. And that would just give me a heads up. But since they closed, like I don't really look on my own for the final order cutoff.
DCBS does it now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, the emails, yeah. It's just, you know, I don't
Most of them, though, when you're wading through them, are the variants.
Yeah,
The late variants.
Or second
always variants. And so I think even, because I scan it, I could see myself missing what maybe I need just because majority of it's variants that I don't care about. And as I scan through, I see I definitely could miss something.
The other thing I noticed, now I'm sure everybody who has ordered a Dark Horse trade before, Dark Horse trades are solicited, like, I swear to God, like half a year in advance or longer sometimes. I think their issues are getting that way too, because I'm like, oh man, I completely missed this Gerard Way series. So I ordered issue one off of my comic shop the other day, and I was like, well, I'll see what I can order. both of them were still available for order on the pre-orders. So I'm like, are they just soliciting? Is Dark Horse just soliciting stuff way, way out, or what's going on with that?
And then there's also that the problem of like resolicits of stuff that's already come out. And I'm like, oh shit, I have two copies of this now because they resolicited it again. And I like checked it. I just looked at the title and checked it.
Yeah, that's the other thing, Mike. There's a lot of times where I'm seeing trades or whatever. I have to plug it into, you know, my order review to see if it pops up that I had already ordered it sometime in the past. Because, you know, I'm up to the point finally where, you know, I might not remember if I actually.
Yeah, I think we're all at that point. Yeah, the one frustrating thing, especially with Marvel, is because I do order books for Jack, and he does for the most part go through the previews. Marvel's previews is like a Sears wish book. That shit ain't even accurate. You know what I mean? Like, it'll have stuff from 2 months ago. Sometimes he'll like, I want issues 1 through 3 of this, and I'll be like, buddy, I can't still pre-order issue 1. We'll just have to wait till it hits.
How hard is it to sync it, though? Like, I just don't understand.
It must be, because they've been messed up ever since they switched from Diamond.
To PRH, yeah. It's like fucked up.
Yeah, so because Jack will come and say, order these, and I'll be like, 3 of the books I can't even get anymore, you know? So, I don't know. It's weird.
So, Rob, did you ever go to Fax Restaurant?
Not yet. We are going to go back up there, but
what is that?
We only have two more episodes of the new season. Did you watch the whole season?
Yeah.
So Joe, what it is there's the show called The Bear.
Yeah.
On FX or Hulu or whatever.
Right.
And one of the smaller characters is also one of the executive producers. Maddie Matheson, he is a real chef, a real live chef. Have you watched The Bear or no?
I've seen some of it. I haven't seen like the new season.
Okay, but if you see it, so there's the heavier set guy with the mustache and all the tattoos.
He's the guy that fixes stuff.
Fixing things.
Yeah.
He's not. Yeah. So he's
kind of goofy.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I know who you're talking
really
about.
He's really a chef.
He's the one that always fixes at the first season. He fixes that video game, which is like a video game knockoff of Mortal Kombat or something.
Yeah. So he's hilarious in the show, but yeah. So he's an executive producer. He's a real chef that has restaurants all over. They have one just over the border in Niagara Falls, Canada. And we went up there one Sunday and we went up with a couple friends. We're like, okay, let's go eat. It's a nice Italian restaurant, you know, doesn't look fancy or anything. It's just looks like the food's going to be good. So let's go try it out. So we went up there and the people I went with, she was kind of in charge, and it's a coworker of mine and her boyfriend. And she's like, yeah, you know, I figure we'll go in there at like 3 o'clock. It should be pretty quiet and stuff like that. So we go, we show up and they're like, do you have reservations? We're like, no. It's like, okay, just a minute. And they leave for a while and they come back. They're like, well, you know, we could seat you around 8:15. So it's like literally like 3 o'clock, right?
Right.
Like, oh God. So we ended up going somewhere else. And now we know we got to make sure we do reservations in advance. I don't know if they've always been busy like that, or now they're busy now that he's been on a show, but either way, we only got to the lobby, Mike. That's as far as we got.
I bet he's busier.
Oh, I bet.
He might have always been doing well, but I bet he's probably even busier now.
Yeah. So we're going to make another – when we get back
this
from
new
Disney,
season seems to focus on the facts a lot.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. But that, I think that's what I miss about the previous season, because my favorite character is Richie. Like,
great. He's a great guy.
Especially
character.
After that episode, after the family episode, I'm like, holy moly, that was like mind blowing. Well, the whole Christmas family thing was amazing.
Yep.
I have never seen Jamie Lee Curtis act like that. Like,
yeah, that was so
absolutely
cool.
Phenomenal. Like,
I don't know if you follow like the Emmys, but like they're all like nominated.
Well, she's got to be nominated.
Yes.
Because she's I knew she can act, but she really puts on her acting chops.
She does.
Like it's amazing what she does in that show. It's incredible.
The second season was
incredible. This season, I like it a lot, like because I'm so into the characters. It seemed to meander, like in terms of three major plot points. Like,
yeah, you know what? It seems like this whole season is more like a character. Like each episode is almost like a character focus, but it's not really moving the plot like forward all that much.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was telling Barb. You know, like while I enjoy it, still one of my favorite shows. It just after season two, and season one, it just didn't like. It wasn't at that level. Like
I would agree with you.
Episode you'd be watching and you're like, oh God, I gotta go to the next one. I gotta go to the next one. This season, not so much.
No, yeah, it's like this episode is focusing on. What the heck's her name? Carmi's.
John Cena is one of the Fact Brothers.
Oh my God, he's hilarious, isn't he?
John Cena?
Yeah.
He guest starred in one of the episodes.
Oh my God.
As a cousin or brother or something of Fact.
Yeah, I haven't seen this season. I like John Cena a lot. He's great.
I'm still waiting for the Fact sister to show up because they always talk about her. Like, they always say that bitch.
No, maybe next season, huh?
Yeah, I'm sure she will.
That's funny, but yeah. So we're gonna give it another try sometime after Disney when things settle down. Summer's just been very crazy now that the kids are getting a little bit bigger. Joe can probably relate.
Well, you should enjoy Disneyland a lot more, though, because of the age that they're at.
Yeah. Last time was pretty good. They were 8, but now that they're 11, yeah, even more so, I think. So what else is going on with everyone?
Not too much, man. Just work and try to read when I can. Once in a while, I'll get a movie watched. That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't watched a lot of movies.
Like you saw Maxine, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
I loved Maxine.
Yeah.
The only part that I loved it, but the only part that I just couldn't grasp was the father. building this like religious cult over there.
I love that. I went with friends and they are not horror movie people.
Yeah.
And I think they were kind of underwhelmed by it. And I was like, they were like, well, I was hoping Maxine would be the murderer. I was like, she's the final girl. You don't make the final girl the murderer. And they're like, well, that would have been cooler. The whole dad thing. I was like, bruh, that's like, I mean, they did that in Scream. They did that in Friday the 13th. That's like a trope.
Well, but it leads back to the very first.
It does.
The very first one is she's getting away.
Right.
At the end, she's like, she turns on the radio and she's hearing her dad, preach and stuff like that, like crazy.
I love the scene where did
she kill anybody in this one?
I know she took
that guy's balls, but
she had to have killed at least somebody because she had a gun when all those like cult people were after everybody. She had to have.
I don't know.
Right? Oh, she shot her dad in the face.
Well, she shot her dad.
Yeah,
that's right. But that might, he might be the only one that
she killed people. And then obviously X, she did.
Pearl, that wasn't her. That was the old lady. That was Pearl. Yeah. Not Maxine.
I love that.
I'm confused. Who's? I thought Pearl was Maxine.
No. Pearl
Go
is
ahead,
the
Joe.
Old lady in X that Maxine kills.
Right.
So if you watched them in order of they actually occurred, like through time, you would watch Pearl first. And then you would watch X, and then you would watch Maxine. And I wonder if that's maybe why my friends wanted her to be the murderer, because, you know, Pearl was a psychopath.
Pearl was the murderer, yeah.
Right.
Right.
But
right.
Pearl was always the murderer. She was never a final girl or something. So
gotcha. It,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Didn't she play Pearl, though? Or
Yeah, she played
Pearl. The same actress played her. See, that's what throws me the fuck off.
Well, Mike, even in the first movie, in Axe, Mia Goth played both characters. They just
yeah, but at least didn't look like the other, like, completely. Oh, sure. Like, there was no way you could tell.
No, definitely not.
She had the red wine birthmark in, as Maxine, though, that Pearl doesn't. So if that helps at all, I don't know if it does. But, what I was going to say, I love the fact that the very first scene in Maxine, she was doing the exact same routine that Pearl did in Pearl. I thought that was really clever.
I read about that, but I didn't remember it. I have to go back and I'll rewatch. Now, yeah. Once Maxine comes out on streaming, rewatch all three.
Yeah.
I think I want to watch all three in the right order.
Yeah. 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 Well, we'll watch Pearl first, and it's like, how do you watch Star Wars? Do you watch them 1 through 6, or do you watch 4 through 6 and 1 through 3?
I've watched them all both ways. So,
okay. Yeah. So yeah, that's that. You just have to figure out which way you want to do it. Do you want to watch X first or Pearl first?
I mean, I prefer like the first time through to watch it in terms of the way it came out.
Right.
I agree with you.
And then, like on second viewings or more viewings, I love to watch it from a different perspective and see it in the order it's supposed to be at.
Well, there's
right now I'm watching Army of Thieves, okay, and that's a prequel to the zombie one that Zack Snyder did, and I want to watch the second one again to see, because they flesh out the guys that are doing the break-in, you know. So, like, yeah, I always do that. I try to go back and rewatch them in the order, because they seem to be doing a lot of prequels lately.
You know, they could, they said that they're pretty much done, you know, that the plan was to do these three. But if you want to make another one, they could definitely make a sequel to Pearl, because there's a huge amount of time.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Between the end of that and the beginning of X, so...
Yeah, I mean, you could even do like one between X and Maxine if they really wanted to.
Yeah, they could. Yeah. Have you guys seen on Facebook? I think it's hilarious. It said like the most this is the most confusing trilogy ever, and it shows X, then X 2, which is the X Men movie. And
yes.
X X X triple X. Yes. The... It's awesome. I was laughing so hard when I saw that.
Yeah, I think that and Deadpool were the only movies this summer where I was like, okay, these are like first weekend movies for me. So we have tickets for a 9 a.m. showing of Deadpool next week.
Yeah, we're going to see.
I was
going to
ask you, when does it come out next week?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely want
to
see that.
Yeah, we're going to see that next week. But we always go to, like, I think last weekend we saw Maxine. This weekend we saw Twisters. So it's like I go to the movies every week if I can get one in.
Yeah.
I mean, I always find something to watch for sure.
I kind of want to see Long Legs. I've heard good things about it.
And my friend watched it and said it was absolutely. I was thinking of going, but we were doing other things, so didn't go. And she's like, "Oh, you totally should have gone."
Yeah. I've heard good things, and I've heard people hate it. So I heard it's very divisive. You know?
Yeah. Well,
I'll definitely watch
Nicolas
Cage
comes. For you.
Yeah, that's true.
I love that one he did with the Mandalorian dude. Was it 2 years ago now? The one where Nick Cage plays Nick Cage. The movie.
Oh, that was good.
I don't know what that is.
It has the Mandalorian guy in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't think of any movie that I. That
it has a ridiculous title. It's so long.
Yeah, right. So he gets hired to. So Nicolas Cage is playing himself, and he's kind of down on his luck. He's doing shitty movies, kind of like in real life at that point. And he gets hired by the Mandalorian to come to like Italy or somewhere. I don't remember, somewhere in Europe, on an island to do a birthday party for him. Like, and he's like, well, bleep it, I'll go. And he's talking about how he has a bad relationship with his ex-wife. He doesn't understand how to get along with his daughter. And then it turns into a straight up spy movie, and it's really, really good.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to look it up right now on Letterboxd. You should check it out, though, because I think it's one of those that, you know, it proved that Nick Cage still had chops. And I think it got him back on the kind of list of somebody that people should be watching still. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of like what's his name? Who did with Birdman, Michael Keaton, you know. What do you mean there's no results for Nicolas Cage? Give me a break.
Heard him.
Like, who is this Nicolas Cage guy? I mean, the funny thing is, when this movie came out, I got the promo, whatever you call it, from the studio saying, you know, you should go to this movie. But it was actually from the actor. I'm about to have his name for you, Pedro Pascal. And I was like, what is this? Are they trying to catfish me or something? Because it made it look like a MySpace message. It was super weird.
That's weird.
Yeah. The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. It came out in 2022.
I've heard of it.
Highly recommend it. It's good stuff. So you should check
it out. Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Yeah, it's a terrible title because nobody's going to ever remember that.
Yeah, but it's good stuff. Right. It's got Tiffany Haddish in it, too. She's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. That's a new one for me.
Yeah.
The other one that I want to watch, but will probably at this point just wait for it to come, is Quiet Place, whichever the
name. Yeah. Just missed that one. We went to go see The Bike Riders instead, but I'll definitely catch that one. I want to see Abigail, but that one is showing on Peacock now, so I'll catch that.
Oh, that's soon. Cool.
Yeah, it's about the little girl vampire.
Oh, I want to see that then.
Yeah.
Speaking of which,
I was getting it confused with, what was the name of the one with the robot girl?
Megan.
Oh, Megan. That was a fun one. I liked Megan.
Yeah, that's what it was, Megan.
We're going to have AI robots all over the place before this is over with, man. That's why you got to be nice to your Alexa, unlike me. I always get mad at Alexa and say mean things. So
I saw a really good AI movie called Atlas on Netflix. It was really good. It had Jennifer Lopez in it. But it was like a mech, but the mech had it would like bond with its host. It was really cool sci-fi. I highly recommend it. It's good.
Interesting. Atlas.
Mm-hmm.
That does sound familiar though to me. I do remember that title.
The whole premise of the movie is AI, so it's if you want or you're into that. It's like AI gone wrong, of course.
I'm at the point now, I can't even tell what's AI and what's not. I just, now if I get a picture, I was on Blue Sky, and a picture of some birds came up in my feed, and I was like, this doesn't look real. And so I did a Google search, and yeah, it was AI, because it's just like the wings or something were off. And it's like, you can't tell anymore necessarily if what's real and what's not.
The DC fired Mateena because he was caught. He was caught because of the Superman shield.
Like, yeah, who blew him in? I don't remember.
I don't remember, but it was so bad when they zoomed in. Did you see the shield?
Yeah.
No.
Oh my God! It was like, you could tell it's AI generated because there's like, it's like triplicated. It's weird. Oh, yeah.
But it was like from a very like odd angle, so it wasn't obvious unless you were staring at it and really.
They actually said he was stealing art. I don't know that. It looked like he was stealing. He looked like he was doing AI on his own stuff.
But yeah,
maybe he's doing a mix.
Other artists were claiming they were stealing. They were stealing his, you know, their art. So.
Well, that's not good.
No.
Yeah.
I never cared for his art. He would always do dark stuff for Batman, and I could never see it well. And then when he does Superman, which is a lot lighter, he gets busted.
I mean, surely he must have been doing his own stuff in the past, right?
I don't know. I don't like. I can almost tell when stuff is computer generated. Like, I think Deodato is heavily using Poser or whatever that app is to do his art. Because the Flash, man, I have never been in the mode where I don't like Flash, and it's the first time in history. Other than the fact that it's got Wally's kids, and I'm sort of following the kids. I really don't like that book.
Oh, is that one Cy Spurrier?
Yeah, yeah. I don't. He's my Steve Orlando. Like,
yeah.
More so John Romita Jr. You guys don't like him. Yeah, I just don't like his. Anytime he does superhero stuff, I can't stand it. But if he does his own stuff, I like it. Like if it's a Boom book or whatever, I grab it.
Yep, I'm 100% with you, Mike. I bounced off that Flash so hard, but like when he's doing stuff like 2000 AD kind of stuff or indie books, I usually like him. Yeah, I agree.
See, I'm the only one enjoying Flash.
No,
you're not the only one because I heard the guy. I listened to a Challenger.
I'm the only out of the three of us.
Challengers, they like him, but I'll take the bice. What were the guys that did the Flash TV series when they did the Flash, the Fastest Man Alive? I'll take them way over Cy Spurrier on Flash.
Wow.
Like, I don't like his. He's doing John Constantine, right? I keep getting it because I want to support Hellblazer, but I don't like the book that much.
But what he does to me is he does something that makes it not be like the character anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know why, but like his plots are fine. I mean,
right.
Just not with the characters that it feels off to me.
That's called Tom Kinging it.
Well, I like Tom King though, but I have to adapt to it.
I will tell you if maybe that's part of the problem is you have to wait too long, but there are in the past issue or so, there are explanations for why they're acting like they're acting.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I've been trying to read it in groups of four, and it's still not working for me. Because those single issue experience is just not. It's actually made Superman my top DC character right now. Like, Superman has always been close to the Flash, but Flash was always like my number one.
Sure.
And for the first time since 1973, Flash is not my favorite anymore.
Superman's been on fire pretty much since Johnson's been on the book, though. What was that, like War World or whatever? I mean, it's just been, once they got out of Bendis, it just picked up and it's been pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, it has like a... The guy that's doing Superman in, you know, how the House of Brainiac, he's got like a Triangle Era vibe to him.
Agreed.
Like he's able to like stream three plots together and keep everything interesting to me. Like there's so much going on that it's like, I like all of this shit, you know?
That's what Joshua Williamson, right?
I think
he's writing half of the DC books right now.
Josh Williamson,
between him
those...
and Mark Waid, they pretty much are writing almost all of DC.
I was gonna say Josh has been somebody who I am slowly getting to the point he's becoming kind of like Gary Duggan for me, where I'm just like, okay, I'm in. I just see the name and I'm gonna just pick it up because it rarely lets me down.
Yeah, he does a good job on everything that he's touched.
Yeah. I actually like the Gail Simone. I know Kirk's not a huge Gail Simone fan, but that Gail Simone action one-off, well, I guess it wasn't a one-off because it's TBC, but I really enjoyed the story. Maybe a one-off, though. I really enjoyed the story she's got going, where it's kind of like the flashback story for action. I thought it was a lot of fun.
I haven't read it yet, but I do have it on my pile here.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm one issue behind on everything, but
yeah, it's good stuff.
I did like Jason Aaron's a Bizarro thing.
Because, oh yes, me too.
No, I just liked his take on it because
I didn't care for it, but I don't like Bizarro. He annoys me.
Oh, I like Bizarro.
I thought you were gonna say I don't like Jason Aaron. I was like, sometimes.
No, but well, I agree with the Jason Aaron assessment. I thought his Avengers was woo.
Avengers was so weak. That's why I was so excited for the one that McKay did, and I still don't like it.
Well, I would say it's McKay's version of Avengers makes me like the tie-ins. Usually, it's so weird. He has the opposite effect on me on that Avengers book. It's like when he has a tie-in, usually the writer loses interest and it's like, okay, it declines. And then the main story comes back and you're like, right on. But it's like right now with Avengers, I'm like, stay in the blood hunt. You know, don't come out. And I hate the fact that they're not in the mansion anymore. Well, those new Avengers are in the mansion. The one that Steve Orlando's book is doing, they're going to be in the Avengers mansion. I don't like that, like that satellite
floating city,
living city.
Yeah.
Whole concept. Like I just don't dig it at all. Yeah.
I think it does benefit because it's kind of like when Bendis was in charge. It does benefit from the fact that I think he's doing both Blood Hunt and Avengers. So he can more seamlessly fit in like the two storylines together.
But he did a fantastic job.
Oh, yeah,
like,
I agree.
He, with the X-Men tie-in because it actually made me like, I've been off and on X-Men. Like, if it's Immortal X-Men, like, that's my book. Like, I like Immortal X-Men a lot. X-Men Red, if it wasn't for Storm, I could care less about it because there's no characters on that Martian world to me that are memorable. Like, I just can't latch on to any of them.
Are those both Gillen books? I know Immortal was.
Immortal is.
I think the other one was Ewing, wasn't it?
Oh, okay.
Ewing. Yeah, Al Ewing.
Somebody who doesn't always work for me. Man, sometimes I do not like Al Ewing.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Like, I was like, okay, Al Ewing, Immortal Hulk. Like, I'm like, oh my God. I gotta buy everything from Al Ewing now.
Yep.
And then I see him on the X-Men book in Venom, and I'm like, oh, like
I do not like his Venom.
I am struggling with Venom right now, and like when, what is her name, Tornik Grinberg, or like when she comes in for a guest spotlight, I'm like, yeah.
Oh my god, that's how I am on Spidey when John Romita misses a two or three issues. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, hey, you know what? For two issues, I'm in.
Say what you want about, you know, JR, but he's definitely not using AI to do his art.
Amen. Amen. Yeah.
he's drawing.
Yeah, he sure is. Oh, that's funny.
I think if I'd go back in time, that I wouldn't like his art because JRJR came from a Marvel. Like, if you look at his Dazzler stuff and his X-Men stuff, it's totally different.
It really is,
And when he developed his, like, own style, which to me is like a sharp line Kirby-looking thing, like, it looks really, it's not definitely not Kirby-detailed, but, like, more of an abstract Kirbyism. I like that way more. But when he first came out with that style, oh, God, I didn't like it. It grew on me, kind of like we were talking about, like Sam Keith. Like, Sam Keith right now is one of my favorite artists. And I never liked, what is the guy, Cry for Dawn, his stuff. And now I love it. Like,
John Lisner?
Now I love it. Like, it's like, it's so weird how my art styles have, like, flipped.
I will say, I think JRJR was at his absolute height with Anacinti on Daredevil, and then with Frank Miller on Daredevil. That is my favorite JRJR, and that's past the X-Men, but not quite where he is today. So it was stylized, but not quite as scratchy as it is now.
Right, right. You could see JRJR, though, in that Daredevil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas if you go back and look at Dazzler and stuff, you would never know that's the current JRJR.
No, just like the regular art. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I think he's doing house style.
Yeah, exactly.
My friends, I probably should get a book in.
Yeah,
I was going to be off in about 40
You guys have to leave in, what is it, half hour?
Yeah, about 40 minutes or so, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, so let's get started.
Let's go. Joe, you start us off.
I got you. So we're going to cover today a book that was my first subscription and also a book that for years I had the title wrong. So and I was looking it up. So iFanboy had a post about it because I was looking for the ad to see how much I actually paid for the subscription to it. And I could not believe $15 in 1986 for a subscription sounds insane, right? Mm-hmm. Cover price was $1.25. And the book we are going to be talking about is DC Challenge, number one. I told you I was going to pick a weird one.
No, I love that. That series I bought at the LCS.
Yeah, I had a subscription to it.
I didn't know they would have a subscription because it was like a mini, it was a maxi series.
It was. So like you paid the $15 and you were guaranteed all the issues.
Yeah.
And let me pull up that real quick so I can just give it.
DC did something very much like that just recently with Commandy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they did.
That same format where it's a different creative team every issue.
But it says take the challenge, and it's got a picture of Dr. Fate with Shazam, and it's got a picture of Adam Strange. I don't know who this is supposed to be down on the bottom. Jonah Hex and Wonder Woman. And I was like, what is this? I want to get it. And I don't know how I talked my mother into getting it. $15 was expensive back in the day, but...
Well, I don't know what I was doing because I bought the first 10 issues off, you know, from the comic shop or off the stand, and I don't have 11 or 12.
Oh, that was so like me for
I
years.
I guess I decided to just stop getting it with 2 issues left.
Yeah, maybe.
it was not an easy book to get, though. You might have just missed them.
Yeah, this was not on newsstands, and I think that may have been my selling point to mom, because this doesn't even have a barcode on it, was, you know, like, please, 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 this has every DC character in it, please, 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 you can't get it anywhere else, because we didn't live near a comic store, and so somehow I must have sweet-talked her, must have done a bunch of chores or something, I don't know, but, so this one, the idea is it's a rotating creative series, so everybody's got a new issue. I actually used this twice. Now, at the library for different programs, we did a program about drawing cliffhangers, and I used the DC Challenge as an example of how you could have a cliffhanger and how to resolve it, and I used it twice. I used the one in this issue, and also used the one where Jonah Hex is in the back of a car, and all of a sudden, all the people driving the car, like, are knocked out, and he had to take over, so... But anyway, this first issue is Ebonier, Colon, and Smith. And yeah, it changes everyone, issues 1 through 12. And they always have like a little funny thing at the end, you know, they get to title the next issue.
Yeah.
Except for, I want to say somebody cheated. And I want to say it was Roy Thomas, because, you know, Uncle Roy doesn't play by the rules. So I think Uncle Roy like changed the title, or he did an AKA. And then...
The point of this, right, was that somebody would leave it, they'd leave it as a cliffhanger, then
yep.
A coming off cold, the following team
had to figure it out,
right?
Yeah, yep, exactly.
I remember in middle school, we used to have that in writing class, like
somebody
would leave a story and then you had to take it off and you could do whatever you wanted. So it was pretty, pretty fun.
But I hated
English back in the day, but that was the one thing I liked.
But the last thing I'll say before I jump in the issue is I remember being really mad doing a reread of this a few years ago when I got to the Roy Thomas issue, because he basically changed everything he didn't like leading up to it. I felt like he totally cheated, but it was very Roy Thomas, you know, like, I don't like this, so I'm going to retcon a bunch of stuff, which is, I mean, that's kind of his entire career, right? Is doing retcons and making things fit. But yeah. Whatever, it's fine. So this first one, they're in the Daily Planet. There's a guy on an elevator. He gets off on the floor. He's really confused. He's like, this isn't the layout it's supposed to be. And he goes into a room, and he's like, what is going on here? It's a bunch of guys in kind of like space age gear and an alien. And he's like, what is this, a Star Trek convention? And he says, leave or I have to deal with you. And so he runs to the elevator, and he's like freaking out doing the, you know, hit the button multiple times. And then you get, excuse me, pal, you got a light? And the guy's like, Bogey? Well, I ain't got no fruit in my head, so I'm not calling Miranda. And so Bogart's in the Daily Planet with him. And next page, we got Superman. There's a guy on the ground. And this is some of that wonky Gene Colan art I was telling you about. This was not his finest. I'll have to send you this Superman image. It looks super, super weird. Anyway, there's a demon coming out of the body, and so Superman's going to have to deal with it. And as you know, Superman doesn't deal with magic so well. So he's wrestling with this demon. Jimmy's watching, and then he sees Groucho Marx, and he says, Groucho's dead. Come on. You don't look so good yourself, kid. Tell the truth or the freckles or liver spots. Don't stand there with your mouth open. Folks will mistake you for Howard Cosell. Did Groucho Marx really know Howard Cosell? I thought he died before then, but whatever. Superman's almost knocked out, and somewhere someone is talking to him, like through, what's that crap called, telepathy? ESP, one of them things.
Mm-hmm.
So he hears, you can stop this demon, lower the air pressure around him. And so he lowers the air pressure around him. The demon gets sucked back into the body and he flies him off. And he's like, well, we got to find an iron lung. I'm like, where the heck do you find an iron lung in like 1985? But anyway, so he goes and puts this guy in an iron lung. And Clark Kent's like, I'm going to go visit Commissioner Gordon. And I was like, what the bleep is he doing going to visit Commissioner Gordon? I mean, is this like the DC universe in the movies? Or is Metropolis supposed to be right across from Gotham City? Because that's not how it is in the comics historically, is it?
I think they're close to each other.
They are close,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, so anyway, maybe it is. So he runs over there and he meets up with Commissioner Gordon, and he's asking about the fellow that they found with the demon. And he's like, this is James Hoyt. He's a small-time burglar, but the problem is he died in 1967. So that's really weird. Then we go to Bruce Wayne's fancy pad, and there's a videotape that's been delivered. And Bruce is like, well, at least it's beta and not VHS. And then Alfred goes, maybe it's one of those movies, sir. I mean, is he saying he thinks it's porn? And he goes, I've never seen one.
This actually sounds like Mark Evanier is really having fun with it.
It does. It's a wacky issue. So he goes, I'm gonna turn it on now. And it's the Riddler. And he says, this tape is rated R for riddle. Wait till you hear today's riddle. And basically, he's like, oh, crap, he knows that I'm the Batman. And he says, why were the Dark Ages called the Dark Ages? That's the question. And Alfred knows the answer. And he says it out loud. He says it's because knowledge was lost, which is clearly the wrong answer. That's not a riddle. That's just why were the Dark Ages called the Dark Ages? And as Bruce is swinging away in his gear, he's like, oh, of course they were called the Dark Ages because of all the knights. Ba-dum-tsh. So he gets... He gets to the museum where he's it's like a night display, and there's a guy about to steal this tablet, and he's like, here's some money. Let me keep the tablet. And Batman's like, no. And so he fights the crook and he gets the tablet away, and he turns around and there's another riddle. It says, you may have caught the Riddler to claim your prize. Figure out which vegetation gives you a charge, then take a calculated risk. So then we switch back to Supes. He's flying off to the JLA satellite, and he puts in the supercomputer's boop, 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 super speed, and he finds out that there's creatures that have been appearing over the centuries in 1881, 1742, and 1614. So he decides to go to the moon to see what's going on. He gets to the moon. There's a weird kind of contraption there. Looks like a cross between a bug and a satellite. And he says, it's powered by solar energy. What's going on? and he turns around and he finds himself face to face with you. And as he says you, he gets zapped and he gets knocked out. And he goes, oh, it can't end like this. But apparently it did. So back at the Daily Planet, that weird kid's like, you saw him. I saw Groucho. And he's like, I saw Humphrey. And they're like comparing which dead actors they saw. And they go up to the top floor. And there's a travel agency where he had previously seen the aliens. He's like, but this travel agency wasn't here. This was where I saw that meeting room. And Jimmy's like, this has been a travel agency for years. So he asked the secretary there, he says, you haven't seen Humphrey Bogart around, have you? And she's like, no, but I can take you to Casablanca. Evanier loves the jokes. So they go to the top floor and they're both like, there's nobody up here. And he's like, I don't know what's going on. So they go to talk to Perry. Perry is talking to Adam Strange, but it's Adam Strange in like civvy gear, which is weird because I'm like, who the bleep is this? And it took me a minute. Because I haven't read that much Adam Strange. Like when he would be on Earth, he would always just be in his Ron gear, right?
No. That was after, I mean, he was, as a superhero, he came back in his suit, but
okay.
Sometimes he would be like in his other alias, like when he would, his Clark Kent, if you will.
Okay.
Because nobody knew he was supposedly him.
Gotcha. So when I first was reading this morning, I was like, who is this, Nathaniel Dusk or something? Because that's basically who he looks like, but no, it's Adam Strange. Then we go to DC. Diana and Steve are talking, and basically they said a nuclear device has been stolen. So Diana and Steve are going to go see if they can track down and see what happens. She changes into Wonder Woman, and she goes to a research lab and talks to the professor there. And he's like, oh, I feel a headache coming on. And he's like, it's more than a headache. Something odd is happening. She's like, professor, what's happening to you? I don't know. I feel a... And once again, we almost have like this kind of demon. This one almost looks more like a genie kind of a guy pops out of him. And he's fighting Wonder Woman. He knocks the crap out of her. And he flies away. She gets in her robot plane and flies after him. Back at the Gotham Penitentiary. I thought it was interesting at the Gotham Penitentiary for the Riddler instead of Arkham, but whatever. He's like, Riddler, I thought you were in jail. How are you getting out to do these crimes? Because, you know, he's been following the Riddler. And he's like, no, I've been in jail this whole time. He's like, oh, yeah, well, I got a riddle, but obviously you wouldn't know it if you didn't do it. And then he asked him, you know, about the vegetable that causes a charge. And he's like, that's easy. It's a power plant. So he goes to the power plant, and there's a guy in a turban, and it turns out it's the alien from earlier. And the alien says, on the wall is the next clue. And it's a bunch of numbers. And he says, well, if you don't figure out, there's going to be a nuclear blast. And I've jammed all the radios, and you only have a couple of minutes to figure it out. He says, when is this going off? When? He said, relax. You have plenty of time. Almost 8 seconds. So the nuclear device that they were looking for is about to explode. And at the bottom it says, Batman has 8 seconds. Len Wein and Chuck Patton have 30 days. Can any of them save Gotham from destruction? Find out in phase 2, Blinded by the Light. Have fun, Len. Ha ha, Mark. So there you go. Yeah. And that's the way this one ends. Nice. And they're like that the whole way through, like I say, until Roy Thomas decides to change up the game and basically start from scratch and throw away all the subplots. But whatever. Yeah. It's pretty fun little series. I still have the original subscription card that it came with because, you know, that was a big thing in the 80s that everything was mailed flat. So they would come with basically almost like a backer board. And on the back of it is this huge subscription fee list. And I paid $15, but $8.50 was what the average book was costing back in those days. So non-Baxter print books like Action and Tales of the Titans and Legion were $8.50, with the exception of G.I. Combat and Sergeant Rock, which does that mean you paid $8.50 and you only got 6 issues? I guess so.
I guess so, yeah.
Or do you get 2 years for $8.50? I don't know. Anyway.
I don't think so. I think that G.I. Combat.
They were all dollar books.
Bigger books. Yeah.
They were not small books.
That's true. One of those bad boys take a minute to read.
Yeah.
But it's a fun series, a weird series. And cool. For years I thought it was Challenge, but it's actually called DC Challenge because it just says Challenge across the front and the DC's up in the, you know, the bullet in the corner. The
bullet, yeah.
Yeah, but if you read the indicia, it says DC Challenge.
Did you read the Commandy one? The one that came out?
I think I read maybe the first, and I meant to go back and get them all, but I never did.
That was cool. That was cool because they would really throw the next writer under the like what there was one story where you think he's even dead. Like how's that writer gonna take off with this story when Commandy's dead? So it's like, yeah, they were putting him into some really crazy predicaments for sure.
That was cool though. I liked that. Yeah. I can go next.
Sure.
Okay. So I'm going to do G.I. Joe number 12.
Nice.
Real American Hero number 12 from 1983.
Did you go for the Kickstarter finally?
I did.
Me too.
Yeah. It's one of my Father's Day presents.
Well, once they threw in the Todd McFarlane issue for free, yeah. I was like, I'm doing it. I'm in.
You know what? For me, it was like, yeah, it's like way more expensive.
But it was hardcover, and then they're going to give it. And they're going to
get it all in one shot.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. I just looked. This is the first G.I. Joe I ever owned. So you picked a good one. Yep.
Wow. Well, Joe, you know, it's funny because the first one I ever owned was number 5. And then, you know, this was the convenience store era. So I got like 5, 6, 7, 8.
Right.
And then it disappeared off the stand. And all of a sudden 12 showed up and I picked up number 12. So from 12 on, I just kept buying it, you know, until the like number 78, I think, was the last one when I just dropped it. But
yep.
But yeah, so this is actually the first one when I'm still missing number 9 and 10. I never completed the run of this.
That's all you're missing is 2?
No, well, and then everything above number 78.
Oh, gotcha.
Some of those are expensive. Until I went back on
a few years later. Yeah. Like,
you get past 100, they get pricey.
Yeah.
Some of them do.
That's because of the low print run. Because
nobody was buying it, including me. But this is a good one. This, of course, by Larry Hama and Mike Vosburgh does the pencils. And it starts off right away in action in San Francisco with a van being driven by Cobra soldiers being chased by Clutch and Scarlet and Breaker in Clutch's vehicle. And they're shooting back and forth at each other and a lot of chaos is going on in the streets. Like one just regular citizen, his car gets smashed in half and know him in his chair in his seat car seat goes flying off to the side and spins around, so it's, you know, he's not injured, but you know, it's all done for humorous purposes. You have this old couple arguing because the woman stalled the car out and the van is coming right at them, so they have to jump out of the car and stuff in the nick of time, you know, all that type of stuff. Well, when the Cobra van does crash into that car, one Cobra soldier with a briefcase comes jumping out of the back just before it crashes. He takes off. He's got scars on both sides of his face. And the three Joes chase him down on foot. And Breaker gets close. And so the Cobra soldier turns around and hits him with the briefcase, knocks him into a couple of motorcyclists, like gang member type guys, and they take offense, so they start kicking and punching Breaker, who's curled up on the ground, and Clutch goes after the Cobra, and he tells Scarlet to help out Breaker. So he goes running after him, and as he turns a corner, the soldier shoots at Clutch and actually grazes his knee and knocks the gun out of his hand in the same shot. He's kind of like crouched. And now he can't chase after him because he's got a leg injury. And Scarlet ends up breaking up the fight with those motorcyclists by shooting her weapon off, and the Cobra guy escapes. And they see that the truck, the burning truck now, was filled with basically they were trying to get this missile guidance chips, and they were in with a bunch of video game circuits. So they're trying to figure that out. You cut back to Washington, D.C., and General Flagg and Hawk are discussing the situation and how we're used to have spies all over the world. Now they're all in Silicon Valley because they're trying, or as they call it, Silicon Valley. something different, but that's okay. You know, they said they have to, you know, put a stop to it and make sure that other countries don't get our chip technology. So Flag tasks Hawk with putting it together a team and going down to a South American country where this particular organization, this so-called chip company that Cobra apparently is representing, has headquarters. So he puts together the team. He chooses Breaker because Breaker's the only one that actually saw that Cobra guy's face with the scars, and then Stalker, Snake Eyes, and Gung Ho.
I think this might even be the first Gung Ho.
I think you're right, actually. Yeah. So the next day we cut down to that country, and it's Rio Lindo. That's the name of this fake country, and Stalker and Breaker are both undercover as people that are opening an arcade and are in business for a bunch of video games. So they go to this video corporation that Cobra has control over, and they knock, pretending that they want to do business. In the meantime, you have Snake Eyes and Gung Ho out in the jungle with eyes on them through some binoculars. So they knock, and an older man opens up the door and says, "Yes, come right in." And Snake Eyes sees who the person, the man's face, and it's actually Dr. Venom, who has appeared in issues past and actually had tortured Snake Eyes. It says the previous in issue number 10. So Snake Eyes takes off. Of course, if you're familiar with Snake Eyes, he can't talk. So Gung Ho doesn't know what's going on, but he chases after Snake Eyes and runs into town. He accidentally bumps into a citizen wearing one of the traditional like Mexican outfits with the serape and the large hat. When the guy falls down, he sees that he's got scars on both sides of his face, and Gung Ho's like, "Oh, that's got to be the Cobra Courier. We got to, you know, can't let him get away." And he starts chasing after him, but Snake Eyes is trying to pull him back towards the actual building. And inside the building, Stalker is trying to do business, and Dr. Venom is like, "I'm sorry, we can't sell you any video games. We don't have any." He's like, "What? That's impossible. I know that you have over 100. And I don't know why, like, he's being so careless. Stalker's being so careless because he says stuff that only Cobra or G.I. Joe would know. So he's like,
"Well, stuff I know, he shouldn't know."
Right. Yeah, instead of saying, "Oh, I thought, you know, we were misinformed" or something like that, he just says, "No, I happen to know that you received a shipment of over 100 video games." and so Dr. Venom's like, "Well, isn't that interesting? Like, well, you could possibly know that, or you're Cobra or G.I. Joe. And I know you don't work for Cobra, so..."
There you go.
he calls the guards, and they come running in. And Stalker and Breaker make a mad dash for a table and turn the table over. And they had an attaché case that had some guns in it. So they pull out the weapons and they're shooting back and forth at each other. Dr. Venom tells them to bring up a heavy machine gun because there's too much of a stalemate going on. However, as they're rushing to the, with the machine gun to the area, out comes Pops Snake Eyes, and he dispatches those soldiers, and him and Gung Ho get to jump on the rest of the soldiers, and everyone's got their hands up at this point. They're going to take Venom into custody because they figure he must be a big shot. And then you see just a machine gun go off, and it actually slices the attaché case off of Breaker's shoulders, knocks the gun out of his hand, knocks the gun out of Stalker's hand, knocks the gun out of Gung Ho's hand, all in a rat-a-tat-tat. And it's Quinn. And if you guys, I don't know if you guys remember Quinn or what about him.
I love Quinn. Yes.
He's an Eskimo. He's a very strict sense of honor. Apparently his first appearance was in G.I. Joe number 2.
Yep.
And he actually met Stalker, Snake Eyes, and Breaker back then. Now, he didn't knock the gun out of Snake Eyes' hands, but I'm not sure why why Larry decided to do this as extra panels, but basically said, I didn't do that because I see that your Uzi's locked back, indicating a dry magazine. So apparently he's out of ammo, and he tells him to throw it down. So sure enough, that's what Snake Eyes does. They tie them all up, and they're going to take them on a boat because they're going to a secure location and meeting with Baroness with the chips, that the actual missile guidance chips that they have. And Dr. Venom says, I'll be detaining Snake Eyes for questioning. And he's like, but first, he's like, you made a fool of me last time we met. And even worse, you struck me with your fist. And so he takes the butt of his gun, and he's like, nobody dares to strike Dr. Venom. And with each part of his sentence, he's hitting him back and forth in the face with the butt of the gun. And Snake Eyes collapses, and Quinn puts a stop to this attack and says, why would you question somebody who can't speak?
Right.
And I also, I gave everyone the word that nobody would die. And a Cobra soldier bends down and says that Snake Eyes has no respiration or pulse, so he's dead. Quinn is upset that, his word was broken. And so he's arguing with Venom, and they said they'll have to continue that conversation later. But in the meantime, Venom orders the Cobra to put Snake Eyes in the building that they were just in, and they go to torch the building and get rid of it. So they hop on the boat, and they start off, and Dr. Venom starts reminiscing. He's like, seeing the building smolder. He's like, it almost reminds me of incest smoke rising from an ancient temple or a ninja temple like the one Snake Eyes studied. The secrets of heart and breathing control. That insufferable enigma. He lives. So sure enough, we cut back to the burning building, and Snake Eyes is rolling around, and his face is even on fire. And he goes bursting out of the burning building, and passes a bunch of just regular people, and they're like, "Oh my God, did you see his face?" Because that they never actually show his face, but that he has terrible scars, and he dives into the water to put out the fire. So anyhow, back on the boat, they're continuing their conversation, Quinn and Dr. Venom. But in the meantime, now if I don't know if you remember, but Breaker always likes to chew gum.
Yes.
He's always popping bubbles. So Stalker's like, "Hey, Breaker, there's rats, on this boat." He's like, "Smear some of your spit your gum out, smear some on the ropes, and maybe with the sugar, the rats will start gnawing on it." And sure enough, that's exactly what happens. So the rats are gnawing on this on these ropes to get free. Then we see that Snake Eyes commandeers just a fisherman's boat and turns it around and starts coming towards for the rest of the group. Now they get to the Cobra Island bunker. Baroness is going crazy, yelling at Dr. Venom because they had Snake Eyes in their grasp and ended up letting him go without making sure he was dead. And Venom's like, "Listen, even if he was alive when we left him, the whole warehouse, is burnt down, and he's got to be." He's like, we don't have to worry about Snake Eyes anymore. So they decide that they're going to go. They're going to take the prisoners into the bunker, but first they're just Baroness and Dr. Venom are talking, and sure enough, they get free from the rats chewing the the ropes. Gung Ho snaps out of his bonds and knocks two soldiers into each other, and their heads. Snake Eyes jumps up on deck, you know, the surprise that they're seeing him, that he's still alive. Breaker comes rushing on deck, and Snake Eyes pushes him back, saying, you know, well, he's not saying anything, but Breaker is saying, oh, Snake Eyes means our mission comes first. Job is to get away from here with the chips. So somebody has to stay and neutralize the bad guys, and obviously Snake Eyes has nominated himself. So he goes marching towards the bunker, and he's standing outside of the bunker, and Quinn thinks he hears something, and he turns and he starts shooting his machine gun. He opens the door quickly, and Baroness and that scarred Cobra soldier say, come on, we got to get out of here, because actually what they have is not the chips that they have. They have a virus and a serum that when they combine it, it's going to cause like major, major world problems in terms of killing people. So that Scarface guy still has the briefcase. He and Baroness jump in a water plane that's nearby, and they start flying off. Stalker and Breaker are shooting from the boat to the plane, not doing much against it. However, Baroness does release a missile at the boat, and it explodes. Dr. Venom comes creeping out of the bunker now, finally. Quinn's like watching all this, and Dr. Venom has a pistol in his hand, and he's creeping up behind Quinn, presumably to kill him. And Snake Eyes jumps up from the top of the roof of the bunker onto Dr. Venom and actually saves Quinn's life. So the rest of them. So actually Baroness circles back and says, you know what, all of these people are expendable. We have what we need. You see Gung Ho, Breaker, and Stalker floating on wreckage, so we know that they're okay from the explosion. They jumped off in time. However, Baroness releases another air-to-ground missile, and it hits. It's going right to the island. Quinn notices it at the last second, and he pushes with his huge machine gun. It looks like he's reaching for Snake Eyes and the door of the bunker before you see kaboom. So they say like Quinn was pushing Snake Eyes towards the bunker door. Do you think he made it? And Gung Ho says it doesn't matter anyhow, Breaker, and turn and look, and there's nothing left of this entire island. It's just some, you know, scorched earth. And they assume that Snake Eyes has died, and as you guys know, this was the last appearance of Snake Eyes. He never appeared again.
Never again.
Nope.
the great thing about this issue is not only is it a phenomenal one, I think as a starter comic for a kid, but it sets up almost a year's worth of storytelling with Scarface, Dr. Venom, Quinn,
yes.
And that whole thing with the virus. I'm right up into the big battle where General Flag gets killed. So,
yeah,
it was a huge issue.
Like I was a G.I. Joe kid in terms of having those toys and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely fascinated me that like there were these major characters that were that had started right away here, like that Scarface guy and Quinn and stuff that weren't like figures.
Yeah, I wanted a Quinn figure so bad.
Oh, so did I.
Was there ever a Quinn figure?
They finally made one, I think.
Oh, did they? When I was a kid, though. They never
no,
had
no,
one.
No. This would have been in the modern era where it was you know, like Hasbro would do like the Star Wars figure with the comic it appeared in.
Yeah.
They did like a Quinn figure with the comic it appeared in.
They were appealing to all of our nostalgia at this point.
Yeah. So this
I would pretend one of my Cobra figures was Scarface and stuff like that. So, yeah, right. It was a lot of fun. The storytelling was just so top notch, you know, you would never think, oh, this is just basically a toy adaptation he's crafting. It was such a great story, you know, and it's a testament that he's still going nowadays, you know. I mean, yeah, they're selling toys, but they're not for kids anymore. These G.I. Joe toys nowadays, they're $25 each, you know.
Toys are expensive.
Yeah, crazy. That's why. That's why I don't mess with them for the most part. I have like.
No,
I would like love a couple.
You know what I look.
I stopped buying toys, but they had the Amazon sale, and they had this box of West Coast Avengers figures, and it had Tigra, which I absolutely love.
I saw that.
Hank Pym. It had like some real obscure ones, Mockingbird, and then they sold the Hawkeye on the Sky Cycle separate, and I'm like, wow. You know, since I could get the whole thing for $65, I think I'm going to get the whole thing because each figure is like $25.
They are.
Yeah.
So it's like, I thought it was a good deal for Amazon Day, and I went at it. But,
you know,
I think I noticed. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike. No, you finish, Mike. Finish your thought.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, like, I was online at some point and something like an ad came up. Now, I didn't realize they're making any vehicles for this new classified series, but I saw the Vamp, which is Clutch's, you know, attack vehicle.
Right.
So I went on Amazon just out of curiosity. Do you have any idea how much that vehicle and Clutch costs?
Oh, no idea.
$350.
Holy Christ.
That doesn't surprise me.
Who's going to buy that?
Fans of G.I. Joe.
Right.
But seriously. It's so expensive. It's like, I don't understand why it has to be that pricey, though. It's
because of demand, supply and demand.
It's just crazy.
Because people will pay that.
Mm.
I would pay it if I wanted it. I don't have any G.I. Joe figures, but
I wanted it that badly, I'd pay for it, but I'm not paying that much money for I'll go buy a comic book for it.
Well, I was recently wanting to get the original Mako dolls from Planet of the Apes, but I lost a bid on it. Yeah, I found what I wanted to pay for them, and it was still expensive, but it was like a complete set, and I was like, oh, it fell through. I lost by, I don't know, $5.99 or something like that. But yeah, you can't always get what you wanna.
No, that's what the Rolling Stones said.
That's right. Well,
guys, I got to get out of here.
Okay. Well,
I got like 15 minutes, Mike, so you can definitely do yours before we end the podcast.
All right.
I'll catch y'all later.
Thanks for joining.
All right. Bye.
So, I'm just going to cover one book today because we're in a hurry, and I'll try to do it fast. But,
that's fine.
It seems like it's from a publisher that I didn't realize existed, but it's AirPad Publishing, which looks like it's a collaboration between Kimiko and North Star, which North Star did some violent books like Splatter back in the 90s and stuff like that. Raw Media, they did a lot of Tim V. Hill stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Leatherface number one, the first appearance of Leatherface in comics.
So this is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, and it's in color, which is very odd. It looks gorgeous, and it's gorgeously violent. It opens up with a woman screaming and saying, she'll do anything, and Leatherface gets a mallet and just drives it into her head and crushes her brains. Like, you can see her brains splattering all over the place, and then you see him cutting off her face and basically sewing it onto his own face another girl with the same tattoo on her face is looking in at her friend getting murdered, and he comes after her. And then the scene cuts to these guys that are in like protective suits, like radiation suits, but they're more like health suits. They find this massive grave of bodies that were decomposing. And I guess when bodies decompose in this sense, they can release toxic like chemicals and form like this weird casserole of toxicity. And I forget what they called it, but it's not a good... it's not a good thing. So they're trying to clear up that. And then the scene cuts to, I guess, a couple that's driving to Florida, and they run into a cop, and the cop's like, well, you got to be careful in these areas and that kind of stuff. And they head out and they see a sign says last chance for gas, beer, and they spell restrooms. So the guy is obviously making fun of that with his girlfriend. He goes, restrooms? I feel like I need a rest, Michelle. And then they hit an armadillo, and it's excruciatingly violent. I actually hit an armadillo when I was at the Cape.
Did you? Once.
Yeah. It's not a fun experience. Except mine didn't get crushed like this one. It sort of rolled and ran off on the side of the road. But this one said, we got to put it out of its misery. And she says, no, I can't do it. So he does it. He kills it. It's pretty violent. And then it shows a guy that's going to that gas station around the same time this couple's there. And this weird guy, gas station attendant, has a patch over his eye with like a string and an eyeball coming out of the patch. So it looks like his eyeball is like poking out of his patch. But he's a nasty, vile guy. You know, he comes to the girl and says, feel her up. I'll feel her up for sure. Hose out her bitch, ditch, make her moan. And she's like, Jesus Christ. And he's like, motherfucking asswipe. That's what it's all about. Like, he's a pervert. And this guy, that's the hitchhiker, basically disrupts the thing, which is good because this guy is not a good attendant. And she pays him and is like, let's get the hell out of here. And she says, we got to go to the bathroom. So that her boyfriend says, you said you needed the toilets that away. It'll change your life. And it's like this awful looking toilet. And this guy, this gas station attendant, has a peephole in there, of course. So he's like watching her pee. But that guy that hitchhiked his way over there catches him. And sort of builds a trust out with these guys. And he says, you know, he was peeping in on you. Well, this guy grabs a shotgun and shoots that guy. And then they said, let's get the hell out of here. And they run away. They got their back window shot up. And then he's chasing them in the truck. And they're like running for their lives. And then all of a sudden, you hear the chainsaw go, and then you see him like raising the chainsaw. But it says to be continued.
Mm.
So it is really a beautiful looking book. It's really violent. And these books aren't cheap. They go for 30 to 40 bucks.
I've seen that. Yeah.
And,
do you have all four?
No, I just have this one, but I'm going to eBay the other three. So
yeah,
I liked it well enough. And I thought it's very rare that you'll see a North Star comic in color. And yeah, in this case, the color really added on to this. So they credit the creator of the screenplay, David G. Snow, and the stories by Mort Castle. The pencils by Kirk Javanen, I've never heard of, but he's fantastic. Mm. And the assistant pedals, I guess he's the assistant to his pencils, maybe drawing backgrounds, is Jason Moore, and an inker of Jeff Austin. The colors are by Suzanne Denschnick and Neil E. Traz. So there's quite a list of creators, but they managed to do a fantastic job doing a horror comic for sure.
Interesting.
And it does a really good job as a comic, just setting the framework of like the shitty gas station and the horror of it all, like being in the middle of nowhere and not knowing anybody as you're traveling cross country. So yeah, I liked it a lot. That's really good.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's nice. You know, before we go, I just wanted to mention, you would not believe what TV show my kids are asking us to watch every night before bed. It's a 1970s show that every week there'd be a series of guest stars.
Love Boat.
Yep. I don't know what's appealing to them about it. They don't know who any of these guest stars are, right? I mean, they don't They literally don't know
because it's books. It's a plot. It's basically a love, like three strangers enter the love boat and they either walk away as lovers or friends or enemies. So
it's just very fascinating to me that this is something that really we've got, you know, Paramount Plus. So we're watching. We watched like the first six episodes.
Already. Yeah. But even if you want Love Boat for free, you could get it off of Pluto TV. It streams 24/7.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. Yeah. I forgot that. Yeah. So anyhow, I just want to mention that because I just think it's very funny and it is retro. But
yeah,
they're absolutely loving it.
And I'm retroing Chips. I'm on season two. Chips going. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I got Chips. That's probably my favorite show. Like, it's I love that show so much. That's something that I would pay, you know, $100 to get a photo of me with Punch and John for sure.
Oh, you know, it's funny that you say that. They're coming this fall to Buffalo. If you, I mean, are you sure you don't want one? Because I can go get an autograph for you and mail it to you.
No, I want to get a picture. Maybe I should just fly there.
With them.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I can get you a picture of me with them.
That wouldn't be the same.
No, it definitely would not.
I'm a 7 Mary 3, 7 Mary 4. I got their call signs and everything. I'm ready.
Oh, that's awesome. But yeah, it's like, I don't know. There's something very calming about watching those shows because
sure. Yeah.
They're from when we were kids, you know, and it's like,
and they're very relevant topics. Like, it's crazy. Like, they had an episode about like media manipulation,
mm-hmm.
kind of like somebody editing film and making it sound worse than it really was, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, it's crazy how you can look at these topics and see, wow, there's still issues today.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah. So, well, we can wrap up and let you go to the party.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you very much. I'm glad the three of us were able to get together.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
So you can reach Rob at Rob Krieger. Joe's at Iowa's Joe on X and Twitter. And I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. And you can find us at DCNoisePodcast.com now. And also on Facebook at DCNoisePodcast.com and GeekBrunchPodcast.com. So we will hopefully get together in another month. Or,
yeah, I mean, if you and Joe can do one in two weeks, that's great. But otherwise,
yeah,
we'll get together when I'm back.
Yeah, maybe in the winter time we'll have a better look.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, we'll talk to you later. Take care.
All right, have a good rest of your day.
All right, bye.